Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
You're listening to Flow Guitar Enthusiasts with Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Great tone. Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players as we explore tone and the gear that gets it.
Tonight on the Flow Guitar Enthusiast, we welcome back Frank Falbo of Falbo Guitars and Designs. Frank is here to talk about his unique designs for acoustic and electric guitars. Frank has also patented a new bridge that allows for more vibration of your top on your acoustic guitar. Flow Guitar Enthusiast is proudly sponsored by our good friends at Sweetwater Musical Instruments and Pro Audio at www.sweetwater.com. And now here are your hosts, Jeff Flow to the Izzo, Floro, and Scott Sill.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. It's a kind of a, it's just starting to cool down a little bit here in Los Angeles. Hey, Scott, how you doing?
I am doing good. I just got posted up a ton of videos. I was kind of teasing them all week. So I've got videos just coming all this week. But the first one I got up is the Audio-Technica 5 condenser mics tested out on a couple different Martin guitars. Really, really cool. Goes from like a lower-end entry-level mic all the way up to a higher-end AT4041.
What was your favorite, if you can say?
Well, as I say in the video, that you're not there to find a favorite and pick a winner. You're there to pick the sound and the device that works for your particular situation. But if I was to have a gun to my head, I would pick the AT4041.
Oh, okay. That's what I thought. That's a great mic.
But you know what? I tell you what, that 2021 is not bad, and that is like a super affordable mic. That is pretty cool little, pretty cool little thing. And then I shot a ton of videos last week. So I shot one that I'm working on right now, the Hot Tone Whip. So I wish I had a whip sound right now. But anyways,
sorry, I don't have my sound effects here.
But yeah, so that one's pretty interesting because I was mixing it a little bit this morning or today before I got here, and so I use a Fender amp, a totally not heavy distortion amp. And that pedal worked, man. It made my amp sound like I was in the 80s. So it was great.
Well, that amp, that quilt, you were using the Quilter, right?
No. I was using my little Fender 57 Custom Twins.
Okay.
That is not a metal amp at all. That is, old 50s, guy.
That's old school. Yeah. That's good. I can't wait to hear that. That was cool. I remember when we had the pedal on the show, and it was cool.
Yeah, and then I did a couple other things. I did the wireless for sure. That's their guitar pedal, so that'll be coming out. And then lastly, I did, for some people that might be totally boring and not helpful, but you know what, I will not be lying here when I say that I actually had to figure this out myself recently because I'm not a big Strat guy. But you know how you get strings stuck in a Strat or in a guitar? So I had to figure out how the hell to get those things out, especially the little tiny strings, not the big strings that you can't push out. So I did a video on how to quickly get rid of them out of the bridge.
Oh, that's cool.
So, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it may, some people might just think it's whatever. But, yeah, that was definitely something that I ran into as a problem because I don't play those guitars that often. Always drove me nuts when I get the strings stuck.
It can be a nuisance, especially when you're like you broke a string and you're playing live and you need that guitar back, and you don't have roadies and like 5 Strats that you can just pull out. Yeah.
Yep. So go to my YouTube channel, Selenium, or search for Scott Sill or Flow Guitar, whatever, you'll find it. So
yeah. Well, that's cool. I'll have to go look at it and see how you solved the problem.
Yeah. Well, so what have you been up to?
Well, actually, this week I finally got my books from Andy Babuk from Amazon, and I went through the Beatle one. Beatle one's interesting. They're going to be revising it. I heard that they're going to be adding more stuff to the Beatle book. But I'm in the Stones book, and it is mind-blowing. I mean, some of the guitars that they had and the amps and all the stuff, it's just I can't recommend that book enough. It's really cool. It's heavy. It's huge. Hint, hint. Make it a Kindle, it'd be great, but it's like it's just pretty amazing. The Beatle book was really interesting. There was some really interesting stuff in it, because I remember some of the guitars, like the Rosewood one. A friend of ours worked at Fender, and he had one of the, not the original one, but he had one of the guitars that were made after that. They made several of those Rosewood, and I remember playing it. And it's interesting. And then plus some of the amps and stuff that they had, it's like, you know.
Well, you know, they made a special edition of that Rolling Stones book. It's made out of stone. I'm just kidding.
No, I can't recommend it enough. It's just great. So I've been that's what I've been doing. I've been looking at that book. I can't pull my eyes away from it.
Yeah, it is a cool book. I mean, definitely anyone out there listening, and it's actually quite affordable, even though it's like you can use it as self-defense.
Yeah. Do you want to? I recommend it for anybody that's really into sounds, because the Stones, both the Stones and the Beatles, were innovative in some of the techniques and what they did and stuff. And it does explain how they did some of the stuff. And I didn't know that the Stones recorded most of their stuff out here in the States. And I would have loved to. I'm so jealous of them that they got an endorsement from Gibson and they were literally just sent guitars.
Yeah.
We can nice. Only, those days are gone, but it would have been nice. Anyway.
Well, why don't we take a quick break, and then we'll talk to our guest who's working on an endorsement for Flow Guitar, I heard.
Yeah. No, we're going to have fun with this one. This is going to be great because these guitars are really innovative, and I'm really excited about that. We'll get into that in a minute, but let's go ahead and go to commercial. We'll be right back with Frank Falbo.
Hi, this is Aaron Raby, your resident guitars and amps geek at Sweetwater Sound. 1-800-222-4700 or catch us on the web at www.sweetwater.com. Sweetwater is proud to partner with The Flow in bringing you the latest and greatest in all guitar-related things, be it tone, be it artists and musicians, their secrets on their tone, amplification, and live performance. We at Sweetwater are just as passionate as the folks on The Flow in bringing you what we consider to be the best in pro audio equipment and guitar and PA gear. Give us a call and we'll discuss gear whenever you like. The number here is 800-222-4700. And again, you can catch us on the web at www.sweetwater.com. I'm Aaron Raby, and thanks again for listening.
Hola, amigos. Hello, everyone. My name is Billy Sheehan, and I'm from the Winery Dogs, and you're watching The Flow Guitar Enthusiasts.
I love it. I haven't played that one for a while, but Billy's just amazing. That's a great little promo that he did for us. Anyway, let's get right into it. A couple of months ago, we had Dan Boole on, and he was talking about his new pedals that he came out with, the Color Boost, the Color Bender, and the Color Face, which I think are out now. And he brought in the person and actually helped him design the circuit for that. And after the show, we went outside. He said, hey, you want to check this stuff out? I build guitars. And he showed us these amazing guitars. And we were just blown away, and we said, we got to have you back on here. So we finally got him back on here, and I just want to welcome Frank Falbo. Frank from Falbo Guitars.
Thank you.
It's great
Thank
to
you.
Have you on.
It's great to be here.
The thing that's really interesting for me is, and we discussed this when you were here last time, is the design of your bridge and how you've negated the pressure. Because we all know, if we've had older guitars, especially 12 strings, the pressure of the strings pulls the bridge up, and it usually warps the soundboard, and it causes all sorts of issues. And I know many friends of mine have their guitars. It's always a problem. They have to send it back in and have them try to fix it. And you figured out a way to basically negate that pressure so that there's no pressure literally on the soundboard so that it doesn't warp.
Yeah, it's all lateral. And, you know, the truth is, if you take something that's a problem, like, hey, this thing keeps breaking, you know, and you make that your only focus, and you don't do anything that helps the guitar sound better, then you end up fixing a problem and taking away all the joy that is behind what, you know, makes the guitar what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So the challenge is to say, all right, I've got this issue, you know, and what I did is in my head I said to myself, you know, like I got 175 pounds of string tension that I got to deal with. And I was like, wait a minute, that means I have 175 pounds of string tension that I can do something with. Like nobody's ever thought, like at least in, you know, in my experience, no one's ever said, what can I do with this tension, right? And so I'm thinking, can't I take that tension and make that the very same thing that undoes the problem, you know, areas that it's causing, right? It undoes the damage. And so, yeah, I came up with a way, this is a long time ago, but I came up with a way to use the string tension itself to neutralize most or all of its own torque. And that's really the key. It's not so much tension, it's torque. When people have taken the tension off of a guitar top, that's like taking the tension out of a drum head. Or like taking, you know what I mean? It's like a trapeze tailpiece. There's no tension on the top per se, because it's just pulling against the butt end of the guitar, and it's got the rims to support it and everything. But now you're only tickling, you know, the top wood, you know, in that up and down manner. And so with this design, I leave all the tension on the top of the guitar. So right in the center where the strings mount, you know, where the bridge is, still has that 175 pounds. It's just that it's not ripping it. It's not torquing it forward. The torque has been neutralized. And there's two things that happen. One, stability. That means I can reduce bracing. I have zero bracing behind my bridge. So there's an X-brace in these models that I have right now, but there's nothing behind it. So these two transverse braces that you used to see and come across, they're gone.
So what we were talking about earlier, those are super scalloped.
Yeah, they're so scalloped.
Well, that's the thing
that they're gone. Yeah.
Guys like Steven Stills would have his Martins shave. They would shave out and scallop more so that the soundboard would vibrate more.
Yes.
But now you have no bracing there, so it's even vibrating even more.
That's right. And it's vibrating in the right direction. Because if you look at any guitar bridge that's being torqued, that's being pulled forward, depends on, you know, how much Googling you want to do, but you can find all the studies that show you how the vibration pattern of a top includes that dipole vibration, where when the area behind the bridge is vibrating up, the area in front of the bridge is vibrating down. And so actually all, you know, normal glued-on bridge acoustic guitars are somewhat of a speaker cabinet that has two speakers, one is out of phase with the other. And we don't hear it that way because we hear the whole box producing the sound.
Right.
But it's why sometimes mic placement can be so critical. It's also why when you stand 20 feet away from a guitar, it sounds like it's 20 feet away, or it sounds like it's in the next room, because the information gets convoluted as it passes through the air. With this design, it sounds, you know, crisp and full when you're standing 2 feet away from it, but when you're 30 feet away from it, the information still travels through the air in such a way that it still sounds like the same guitar. And so there's all, you know, again, is it just a carnival trick? Does it matter? Like, do I care what my guitar sounds like 35 feet away? Well, you do, because it changes the way your guitar sounds into the mic that's 6 inches away. Because all that phase information, all that confusion from the top of the guitar are the reasons why you have to go in and notch out 100 and something hertz
right.
when you're recording your, you know, your vintage Dreadnought.
So on a conventional guitar, now, the back is the top is pulling up, but in front of it where the sound hole is pulling down, so there's like a phase thing.
Yeah, now there's the torque that's causing the behind the bridge to be pulled up and in front of the bridge to be pulled down. But I'm saying that then when you strike the strings, they actually vibrate in sort of the opposite manner. You know, when one's pulling, the other's pushing.
So that's why when you move the mic, and we've demonstrated this on my guitars when we've had the mic companies on.
Yeah.
Where you move, it changes the tone.
Yeah.
Now, can you play something here on one of the guitars and move the guitar back and forth around the mic and show the consistency?
Sure. And I'm not sure which mics we'll leave up, but the nice thing is, even if some of these ambient room mics or some of these other vocal mics happen to be on, the sound in the room is still good. It still penetrates those microphones in more of a phase-aligned way. But, you know, if I just strum a G chord, I'm about 8 inches away from these microphones that are sitting in front of me. And now I'm moving. There's a little amplitude difference, but it doesn't all of a sudden get to a place where the mic position is wrong.
It's pretty consistent. The only reason it's getting louder is the sound hole's getting in front of the mic, so it's pushing more air. But wow, that is amazing.
I mean, now I'm at the seventh fret. And normally that would be not as good of a sound, you know. Now I want to get right in front of the sound hole, so I'm just screaming into these microphones, right? What would normally happen there is the bass would be overwhelming. And so, again, I don't want your listeners to think that guitars don't have a lot of bass or they're too
tight. Well, you're getting there is a physical thing. You're getting a little bit more because the sound hole.
Yeah.
But now go farther past the sound hole to the back.
Yeah.
Because I've mic'd it that way, too.
So now I'm in the area behind the bridge.
Responsive. And if you go back and listen to some of our shows, like with Mojave and AES, you can hear the difference. Take a listen to what I was doing with my Martin, and I was moving back and forth, and you could hear the difference. So it's a good comparison.
You know, and it's not so much of a problem that it's different. Again, this is what studios have been built upon for, you know, decades, is they're saying, well, I like the mic. Oh, I'm going to put it here. Oh, I like it over here. I like it over here. And everyone has their own different opinion on where they want to put a mic and why. It's just that there's some freedom with this guitar to decide how you want it to sound, like how you want it to be voiced, and then not have it come with the handicaps of saying, all right, well, now I got to notch this out and hope the guy doesn't hiccup when he's playing the track. You know, I got to notch out the bass. I got to lift the highs to a certain way, or whatever. You don't really have to do that. All the frequency, you know, information is there. And the other thing that this bridge design does, when I don't have the torque and I have lightened up bracing, is it just greatly opens up the dynamic range and the frequency response. Again, on a radio, these mics are excellent. You know, everything's different still in person. But there's, you know, you've heard it. I mean, there's a deep bottom end in these guitars, and then there's still a really crisp, you know, brilliant treble.
Yeah, no, and he's finger picking. Play something finger picking. You can hear the middle strings. That's a good indicator of the balance of the guitar if you can hear those inner voices. Now, let me ask you something too, if I'm getting this right. Most standard guitars, the pinholes where you enter, where you mount the strings, where the strings are pulling, is in the bridge because you have the bridge pins.
Yes.
So you're pulling the bridge up. Now, what he's doing on his guitars is the holes are past the bridge. So what's happening is he's pushing up. He's, instead of pulling up more from the bridge, he's getting more of a down pressure at the bridge. And it negates the, if I'm correct, it's negating the pulling up that would be from where the strings are entering through the holes, right?
Yeah. And
so it kind of balances it out.
Correct. The location of the holes, none of what you see from the top of the guitar is the trick. You know what I mean? What you see from the top isn't what's actually causing this negative, you know, the torque neutralization. It's what's happening inside and how I receive the strings ball in and how I take that energy and transfer it, you know, to the top, and through the bridge plate. There's, of course, every guitar, acoustic guitar has a bridge plate in there. So there's that, but yeah, what you see from the top is these holes are behind the bridge. Now, really, when the ball end settles in, it's a little bit forward of that because it's going down and then, you know,
yeah, there's
and
a slot in front of the where the ball end goes in, so
yeah,
there's a little bit of a, but let me ask you this. We were talking about this before the show.
Sure.
Spruce is a soft wood.
Yes.
That's metal strings. How do you prevent, wouldn't that just eventually wear out the wood?
Yeah, it's, you know, I mean, if you look at old guitars that have been strung and restrung a zillion different times, a bridge, you know, the prime example is something like the kinds of bridges that you string through the back of the bridge. They don't even go into the guitar. So Ovations have it. Some Taylors have it. Takaminis, you know, where you slide the strings in the back. And yeah, behind that, you know, that all that area is just completely chewed up just from having those string ball ends bang into there, you know, on the way in and out. So in this arrangement, you just drop the ball end in. So if you have bad aim, you know, and you kind of bounce it, you know, while you're going into the hole, Then yeah, you're touching the spruce, but as soon as you pass the spruce, it's rosewood bridge plate, and the piece that it goes into is actually it's a phenolic based material. It's a special material that I've chosen that has
the hole of the sound bridge, there's something else there to protect.
Absolutely,
it.
Yeah. The whole thing, okay. the string ball end goes into a piece. There's a piece in there that, again, I can't really reveal. You know, that's, I suppose, cool. If competitors want to buy a guitar and saw it in half, you know, they can look inside and see the
that
kind of
thing. That would be a shame.
Yeah, right. The music would suffer, right? But to answer the question on the spruce, yeah, I have a technique where the and this, you know, stuff can change with automation and stuff like that. But right now, this is the way I'm doing it. I'm cutting the holes in the top of the guitar after the guitar's been painted. And then what I do is I come in with the thinnest cyanoacrylate. And that sort of becomes my finish around in and around that hole area. And what that does is that wicks in to, you know, I mean, I've seen it wick into a sparser grained wood like mahogany. I've seen it show up an inch away where it comes out the pores, you know. Mm-hmm. So in this spruce, it's basically wicking in and penetrating an area around it and around that whole part, you know, where you might put the ball end in. So while you can't see it, while it looks like it's just been painted that way, the truth is the spruce there has been reinforced. It's like it's almost been, you know, it's petrified. You know, there's a whole thing in there. You know what I mean? So yeah, you know, even if you bounce it, you know, bonk the ball end against the spruce, you're hitting an area of the spruce that's been reinforced.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think. You know, we've heard you play a little bit of it. Let's hear like 30, 40 seconds of you playing so we can actually hear this, and then maybe we can move to something.
Sure.
You brought a ton of guitars.
Yes, they're really
beautiful.
There's
some. Yeah, we got some fun ones, and I guess got a message that a friend of mine is on his way up, and one of these guitars happens to be his. But yeah, so this is the Dreadnought. I'm not that great. I'm not the guy to do all the finger picking and show off everything, but I can at least make the guitar sound like a lot of different things that somebody at home might do with it when they get it.
Now, you, if you listen to the Dan Boole show we had, actually it was Frank that demonstrated on guitar, and I know he's being modest, but actually he's quite an accomplished guitarist, and I just wanted to say that your technique and your taste in playing is just amazing.
Thank you.
Now, this is a Dreadnought that he's using, a
yes.
Dreadnought-style body. Quickly, what other innovations are in Falvo guitars that make them unique?
Well, when you start talking about this bridge, there's so many things. I talked about the phase relationship. I talked about the amplitude and the dynamic range. If you finger pick a guitar like this very lightly, it almost sounds like there's a little compression on it, like there's a little treble, you know, boost on it, and there's not. And, you know, but there's a lot of room. There's a lot of headroom to hit it hard. If you hit a guitar that's underbraced hard, then all of a sudden, like we said, it's like it's almost like hitting a cymbal too hard, and it goes like boing, oing, 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 or something. You know, there's an unnatural sound, and so my guitars, I can play softly and I can play loud. There's a huge dynamic range, and when I do it, the guitar is comfortable. It's uncomfortable in all those places. It's also comfortable if you pick it back by the bridge, if you're a twanger, you know, right? If you're that guy. or you play it up by the, you know, by the fingerboard. It's all a sweet spot, you know, so all those areas are still comfortable. But another thing that happens is I've had people tell me, like, oh, man, you know, your guitar is intonated so well. And okay, fine. That's a condition of putting the bridge saddle in the right place. But one of the reasons why people will say, like, wow, the intonation is really nice is because with if I'm not splitting the guitar top into two in that phase relationship that I talked about, then when notes are slightly out of tune, because everything's tempered, right? Nothing's perfect.
Right.
When notes are slightly out of tune, on a guitar that's split in half, you have all these modes, nodes, if you will, but you have all of these positions in the guitar top that can start to argue with one another. And you strike on certain frequencies, and there's some combing, and there's some filtering, and then there's some boosts in certain areas. So a string that's out of tune will create like a warbling, like a wah 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 kind of a sound. It'll kind of, you know, it, you know what I mean? We've all felt
it. Well, it's phasing. It's basically like a phasing.
Yeah, and so if I take, like, let's tune this up. You know, if let's say I strike this harmonic, right? And I'm going to just drop the low E string. I'm just going to detune it, right? And there's none of that. I mean, I can
there's
get
no
right
cancellation,
up.
Right. Yeah.
Let me get right up on the sound hole, right?
Now, I know when I tune, you're not getting that beating.
Right. That's exactly what it
note.
Is. It's oscillation, modulation.
If you've ever tuned your guitar and you're tuning octaves or something like that, you'll hear and it'll get closer as you tune.
Right. And the reason why that's so loud is because on other instruments, that turns into, that becomes this problem, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it becomes this thing that throws the top of the guitar into a loop. Just like if you have a performance car and something's out of whack, you know, all of a sudden at a high speeds, it's going to shimmy and shake and do
right.
all of those things.
Now, I just want to mention, too, the way we have the mic, I'm using my Audio Technica for the show. It's flat. We're not EQing anything. And we did that on purpose. So you hear the frequency response of the guitar. We're not altering it in any way.
Yeah, and if you see the videos later, that will be the AAA ribbon mic.
That's right. So that should be pretty flat.
N22. Now, speaking of mics, one of the folks on one of my favorite sites to go to, Gretsch Pages, a little plug for them because I always put our show on there, but a guy by the name of Neotone, I believe, wanted to know what you like to use to mic a guitar. Or acoustic, I'd
assume. Oh, asking me this, mm-hmm. this question.
Yeah.
Holy cow. I punt to every studio engineer across the entire world. But we always like to have our condenser mics, you know, sitting out in front of the guitar about 8 inches. You know, you can't go wrong with Neumann's. There was a Telefunken that we used at Vintage King in Nashville to record a little bit when we went to test it out. And the thing is you have guys who will end up with a favorite for a Martin or a favorite for their Guild or a favorite for whatever.
Right.
And they end up with those preferences because they actually those microphones work to they work in conjunction with the guitar's innate, you know, positives and negatives.
Right.
And so that's where all these opinions get developed, just like the same way that they get developed why, you know, should I put a ribbon mic in front of a Marshall 4x12 or should I just use an SM57? Everyone has their opinions that they've developed over time, but it's because a 4x12 cranked is actually not a good speaker sound. It's it's bad, and it's bad, and we love it. Mm-hmm. You know, so we're compensating for a lot of things in the guitar, in the acoustic guitar with microphones and with microphone placement. And what I'm saying is you have total freedom with a bridge like this and a top that's vibrating, it, you know, in the way that it's vibrating, to just park a mic in front of it and start listening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you go into the studio with this guitar, it's not going to take you very long to get a great sound. But at the same time, you're allowed now to experiment and, you know, have this freedom. One of the things that I like to do that again, just blows me away about this guitar. I'm so excited that this occurs. I remember I told you how when you're 10, 20, 30 feet away, the guitar doesn't actually sound different. It actually it pushes through the air in a very aligned way, right? Mm-hmm. So one thing that sounds – it, you know, it works on 4x12s too, but it works so well on this guitar is you mic it up close, you know, near the 12th fret or near the sound hole. And then you put a mic in the room that's far away. However far away you want it, okay? But in post, you go in and you time align it. So the microphone that's 5 feet away or 10 feet away, you bring it back 5 or 10 milliseconds until those peaks line up on the screen, so that that mic is actually delivering the sound into your track at the same exact moment in time as the microphone that's sitting 6 inches in front. And when you do that, you pick up some room. You don't have to compress it. You don't have to make that mic sound reverby. It doesn't have to, you know, enhance all the reflections. But you get the sound of how the guitar fills the room. And if you try to do that with a guitar that has a traditionally torqued bridge, it usually ends up with a track that sounds like mush. You know, you end up where it sounds more distant. It's just not in your face.
Right.
Even if you time align it, because now the two pieces of information have so much phase cancellation, mm-hmm. even though they're time aligned, there's so much information that's convoluted that they don't like working with each other. And so then you say, oh, I'm going to pan one left and one right or whatever. But in this case, you can create a right straight down the middle, you know, image that hits you right between the eye that includes information that's farther away from the guitar.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing holds true with information behind the guitar. I don't really necessarily think when you're tracking you need to get behind the guitar, but everyone has their own opinion about that. And some guys really like to get that sound coming off the back of the guitar. Great. Love it. You know that if you time align these things, and you can play with not time aligning them, you know, and just pan them and, you know, deal with that. Because, again, that's creative. That's like me telling you how to make soup, right? You can't do it. But the beauty is on a guitar like this, or with this design, you get all that freedom, right?
Well, I think it's cool is that, you know, if you're a guitarist that moves a lot,
yeah.
in the studio, when I'm recording, I have to sit there, you know, in that sweet spot and just play.
Yeah.
It's nice to be able to move a little bit. You're not messing it up. You're messing the track.
Yeah.
I want to interject real quick because our second guest just walked in. Kevin Geyer from Tremolo.
Yes,
Tremolo. And you had mentioned, you wrote something down for me when we were talking about microphones about Alan Parsons.
It was just a little joke for Frank. When,
oh,
when
no.
someone asks what microphone to use, the microphone to use the correct one is whatever Alan Parsons suggests.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
So.
Do you think I'm going to argue with that?
No. I'm a big fan of Alan Parsons. I mean... He knows his microphones. So he gets some amazing sounds out of it.
He's sold a few more million records than I have.
Yes. So, Frank, tell us about the woods that you use on this guitar and why, and then, you know, what could be available if people wanted to order fallible guitar.
Yeah, if you look at the website, there's the Alpha series, right? And that is the main launch series. That's my maiden voyage. And for that, I've chosen rosewood back and sides. The neck is mahogany. That's pretty standard. The fretboard and the bridge are made of ebony, and the headstock overlay is ebony. But I'm using an Italian spruce top. For these guitars, like I said, these are the early serial numbers. These are the first ones, you know, coming out of the gate. And what I wanted to do with the Italian spruce is show how I like Italian spruce because it's tight, it's bright, it's a high altitude, it's crisp, it's very detailed. And so it has a lot of those good qualities, but when somebody uses Italian spruce often, then what happens is they use it for the brilliance, they use it for the clarity, and sometimes the bottom end can be like too tight or lacking or whatever, right? And again, everybody has all their different ways that they, you know, to brace a guitar, to voice a guitar, so I don't want to put anybody in a box. But oftentimes that's the way you'll see it being used, and so with this Italian spruce we used on this design, I still get a tremendous amount of bass, and it's deep, and it's tight, it's kind of subwoofery, and so I just really felt like that was it's just my best foot forward as far as how to show people all of the wonderful things that this design can do, all the deep frequency range, you know, that I can get into that other people can't. So I've made guitars with other spruces, and they do kind of the same thing that you'd expect them to do on any other design. You know, so the Sitkas are softer and they're a little more mellow. And so there's, mm-hmm. I get all those other variations. But the nice thing about it is that sometimes it's a trade-off when you choose a wood that's softer, you give up detail in the top end. You give up, you know, that extreme treble, those fingernail, you know, clicks, you know what I mean? Just that articulation. But with the design that I have and with the way I'm kind of just sending the treble out across the entire top in a shockwave, you know, like right immediately as soon as you hit the strings, you don't lose that. And so that's been one of the benefits. It's something that I can, you know, if somebody sends me an email and says, look, man, I really want a guitar from you, but I want a walnut back and sides and I want to have X kind of spruce on the top, not a problem. You're still going to enjoy all the things that this bridge design brings to the table.
Yeah. You'll
enjoy the dynamic range. It's going to sound sensitive when you play soft. It's going to be wanting to vibrate. Because that's the real trick. This guitar is ready to vibrate. It really just wants right. to go. You don't have to hit it very hard.
Even with the, you know, with the microphones don't do justice, but when you hear this thing acoustically in the room, mm-hmm. the dynamic range is incredible because you can really dig into it. It, you know, you're limited with a microphone because we can distort the mic. So,
right.
But if you hear him playing live, if you were in the studio right here without the mics,
yeah. I do. Hear
he can get real light.
I hear him live. I do hear him. Live. I'm he's right here.
He's
I
talking
can hear
to
it.
Everybody.
Oh, oh, I'm yeah. sorry.
Actually, the what I want to do if Scott, if you'll do the honors, grab one of the it's the auditorium.
Yeah, the Grand Auditorium.
Grab that one, and
because
I want to show I want to make sure that we play some of the different ones, and I want to the guitar you made for Kevin. I want to definitely bring that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
All right.
So he's going to prepare that.
All right. What can we talk about in the meantime?
You're going to need a wide-angle lens for that. Yeah, you can put the GoPro on.
So, but anyway, we're going to the next guitar he's going to show us is an auditorium guitar cutaway.
Yes, it's a Grand Auditorium cutaway.
And then we were talking about this before too.
Yeah.
The way you're because of the way the soundboard is free to vibrate and you don't have that phasing problem. You were telling me that the cutaway, most guitars when you get a cutaway, it does affect the sound like that dreadnought. If you got a cutaway version of the dreadnought, like the Martin dreadnoughts,
sure.
There is a difference. There is not as much resonance.
Yeah.
But you're saying that with these, with the way you're bracing and stuff, it minimizes the cutaway.
Yeah, it's just less of a part of it. No one would say chop away 3 inches of wood and the sound doesn't change at all. But I've found it to be much less of a difference,
mm-hmm.
and that's because the majority of my sound is happening from the bridge out. It's driving from mm-hmm. the center out. And so if you just kept drawing larger and larger circles from the bridge out, that's my hot zone. That's where the mm-hmm. most things are happening. So as you get further out from there, you know, it's less and less. There's less value from that, not only from the top, but there's even less value, you know, from the cubic airspace. So you lose mm-hmm. the cubic airspace when you put the cutaway in. But on a guitar that is, you know, that has the torque in it, you know, a typical Martin style guitar, you know, if you go grab a pre-war Martin, I mean, you know, nobody's cutting a cutaway into that guitar. You know, the reason it sounds the way it sounds is because it is symmetrical. It has, you know, the asymmetrical bracing, of course, inside, but the top is the way it is. And so when you put a cutaway on something like that, you can really hear the difference. And there's just less of a difference. I haven't recorded ABs. But I have had cutaway and non-cutaway guitars in my hands at the mm-hmm. same time mm-hmm. and physically done the ABs. And, not playing them at the same time, not Michael and
Steve Vai in it.
Yeah, no, not doing that. But yes, being able to do the quick AB. Like my parlor guitar, it's a little tiny guitar. There's more volume and dynamic range and frequency response in that than there is, you know, in any other parlor that I personally have played. And that's the story I'm getting from everybody else that I've shown it to. Well, the same is true for my parlor with a cutaway. Like, my parlor with a cutaway is still more dynamic or louder mm-hmm. or whatever. It still is more of all of those things than the next parlor that you set it up
in. And you think, let me ask you this. Do you think that's because of the soundboard, the fact that the soundboard is responding more?
Yeah.
That's really where it's negating it. You don't need it because your soundboard's vibrating so freely and you have less bracing, so it's moving more. So
and it's vibrating in unison. That's the whole thing. The top, the whole area of the top is vibrating in concert with itself.
Mm-hmm.
So what's different is, again, no matter how good you can make, you know, how thin you want to shave down the bracings in a pre-war Martin-style guitar or how heavily you want to overbuild, you know, a 70s Guild-style guitar, no matter what limits you want to place on it, you still deal with that torque and you're still dealing with sound that's splitting the top in half. Imagine if you had a drum head and you stuck a fish hook in it and pulled on it in one direction. It's not going to ring anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same as putting a piece of duct tape across it. You know, so I've freed this up and brought it into a state of balance. So now it's like a speaker cone that's going in and out. Now it's like a drum head that's going up and down. And it's just tuned. The top is just tuned into a position where it's ready to vibrate. You know, if it were a drum head, you would hit it and it would go ping and it would ring out for a very long time. That's why my sustain is so long. You know, if I hit a note, it not only lasts for a long time, but the notes within the chord also last at the same duration. You don't have a chord that resolves to like one or two notes within a short period of time.
Well, we've heard the dreadnought. Let's hear that guy and give us a little something there.
All right. So yeah, the Grand Auditorium. I mean, a lot of guys lead a band from a Grand Auditorium type of guitar. There's guys leading worship. They lead their bands, playing it, strumming away. And so you can hear there's a little more mid-range voice in the Grand Auditorium than there is in a Dread. The Dread's a little drier. And so with the Grand Auditorium, I get, you know, it's like I said, it's kind of that more upfront guitar. You know, if you're going to be out there leading a band, it's a great guitar for that. It cuts through the mix a little bit differently, not better or worse, but it just occupies a little bit more of that mid-range space.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think you've told us a couple questions. What do you use for your bridge and nut material? And then do you use hide glue or do you do other kind of glue techniques?
Yeah, the glue itself is it's in the wood glue family. The actual types of glues, of course, become trade secrets, and so you don't want to mention them. And I do build these guitars in conjunction with the Larivee factory. I build them in – they're built in the Larivee factory, right? So at the same time that I could say, you know, here's the kind of glue that I use on the bridge and here's why it's different than the kind of glue that I use in the neck joint – you know, nobody wants to leak that stuff out, right? You know, so you have to be respectful of those things. But it is not hide glue, and so I will say that. I'm not using hide glue anywhere on the instrument. And the way that I'm transferring vibrations from one piece of wood to the next throughout the bridge area and whatnot, it just doesn't, you know what I mean? It doesn't, to me, it just doesn't become a thing of value anymore.
Is your finish special, or is it a standard type of guitar?
Yeah, it's pretty standard. I mean, I can't speak for which other brands happen to use the same materials. But what I loved about, you know, in the finishing department over at Larivee, Pat runs finishing, and it's so good. He's so good at what he does. And so what you want to end up with is a thin finish that is strong, right, is durable. And a lot of times people will talk about nitrocellulose, often in the same discussion as the high glue, and be talking about how it's softer and whatever, resonates more, blah, blah, blah. Spruce is so soft that by the time you build up enough nitrocellulose, because it soaks into the wood so far, by the time you build up enough nitro to get a finish that looks thin to the naked eye from the top of the instrument, it's a sponge. Mm-hmm. I mean, it has sunken so deep into that spruce. Again, I'm not saying it's a bad finish for a guitar, not in the least. But I'm saying it to draw contrast. What they're doing here is, you know, wash coat, some base coats. You know, what happens, here's what I can say. Okay, this is the part that wouldn't be a trade secret. The layering that they do to build up is done in such a way that the next layer does not melt the layer beneath it so that it sinks deeper into the pores.
Right, right.
So what you are, you know, what they're creating is something that has a nice bite. It's got some nice teeth on it. It's not a nice bite into the wood, but it's not building up, and you don't have to build it up that thick. So it's a thin finish. It behaves like a thin finish, but it's still really durable.
It's durable.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's, I like it. I mean, when you look at my guitars, you'll see the grains of the spruce in the finish, you know, as you look
across.
Oh, yeah,
you can see. It's noticeable.
And so you can tell how thin it actually is, but it's really, it's really strong. So back to the materials, you know, bone nut, bone saddle.
Okay.
And that's just where that's where my head is. There's a lot of great materials out there.
Yeah.
Sometimes I like tusk. If somebody is ordering from me and they have a request, not a problem. I made a black topped guitar with Zuricote back and sides for Henry Kaiser, and the nut material had to be black. And so I used a special material. Actually, you know, I say a special material. For his nut, I happen to use the exact same material that I used to put the bridge inserts, the things that the ball end is going in. So there was some synergy there, but yeah.
We only have a little, we're running out of time so fast. I'm going to ask Scott to bring in Kevin's guitar.
Yeah.
And
Did I not bring in the right guitar?
No, just bring the other one.
The double.
Yes, you did bring the right
one. The double neck.
Oh, okay. I was like confused.
And what I want to ask you real quick, I want to get in a little bit of Kevin, and then we'll go back to the double neck because I want to ask about pickups.
Sure.
Anyway, you make a device called we have it here, and I took some pictures of it, the Tremolino.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
It allows you to lock the bridge, like a Strat-type bridge.
Correct.
Or a Floyd type of bridge. Can you tell me a little bit about it?
And this is kind of how Frank and I know each other. I started doing this patent process, and Frank was following along and seeing how insane I was becoming, and said, no, I can do that. That's pretty easy. It originally started out with reading on online forums and groups and stuff online, people crying rivers about if I break a string, my guitar goes out of tune. XYZ company doesn't make enough hardtails. I can't do all the drop tunings that I want to do and play all my crazy, you know, rawr, barking. So I had my Ibanez RG Art in my lap, and I like to play when I'm online. I'll try and play Lukather stuff. I don't know why, but I try.
And, I do. I love this stuff. It's great.
So I had this the guitar in my lap, and this is the moment that they call the flash of genius. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking down at the trem springs, and I said, you know, if you just put a little shaft right here with a couple of thumb screws, you could control what the tremolo does whenever you want. Just reach back and put a couple thumb screws on there. Mm-hmm. And call it done. So that's when I started doing that. And that was in the last millennium. We don't put dates on anything because our patent attorneys tell us not to.
Yeah.
I started working on that, and I originally started working on it when I lived in New York, and I currently live in Ohio, and finished it up in Ohio. It was a 3.5-year process to get my first patent. And then Frank started in with his patent process doing other things, and then we came to the intention bridge, and all of the CAD work that I had done with the tremolo, Frank's like, hey, can you do some CAD stuff for a new thing that I've got? And I said, yeah, sure. And he said, how much do you want paid? And I said, $1 million. And Frank said, no problem.
Right. Yeah, so there's points in the story that Kevin's leaving out.
Yeah. mainly the $1 million.
Yeah,
part.
Mainly that all. Mainly that almost all of it is a lie, and he didn't put that disclaimer up front. No, I mean the really neat aspect of Kevin even sitting here right now today is he just got off an airplane. He's leaving all this stuff out. There's no reason Kevin should be in California right now in this exact second, right when this radio show is going on. But the synergy or the serendipitous, you know, encounter is such that, you know, I just figured it had to be done. And it's true. When Kevin, you know, I'm sitting there in my house with a normal day job, you know, that I probably should have stayed at. And, you know, and Kevin's telling me, I did this. And I'm saying, you know what? Then I'll just do it. I'll go for it. And that's what it was, you know. I mean, it's a lot of guys listening right now know me from Seymour Duncan. You know, I invented this P-Rails pickup. I've done a bunch of other pickups with Seymour Duncan and other products. I no longer work for them. It's been about 2 years since I've gone on my own and done these things. But yeah, I mean, he was kind of, you know, he's kind of the motivator. And so I had these guitars launched. I had a bunch of stuff, and I said, you know, it's time for a 12 string.
Right.
I said, you know, do you feel like taking this 6 and then stretching it and turning it into the 12?
And we had a ton of discussions. We used as much technology as possible. We used iChat and FaceTime and all that. And I have one computer that's dedicated to CAD. And Frank's like, no, it has to go offset like this. And I would draw it, and he would go, no, it goes offset the other way. And then, no, flip it around and make it black. And so,
yeah, I mean, if you just listened the first time.
Right, if I would have, I would have heard it right, it would have been done right. So we worked on this for a long time, just trying to make sure everything was perfect. And Frank knows that I have this really bizarre double neck fetish. Which I don't even know where it comes from.
I think Scott has that too.
Do you?
Yeah, I have a Gretsch 6120 double neck.
I'll bet you do. Yeah. So, yeah, it's just this weird thing. And when Frank said, I'm doing a 12 string, I'm like, Frank, I have an idea. And because Frank knew that I had a Kramer Farrington, and I really love that guitar because when I lived in New York, I could take it down to the beach and play with friends, and it was great. And I really liked the sound of that sort of semi-acoustic, thin body. And yeah. Frank's like, I have an idea.
Yeah.
We can do your double neck, thin body.
Yeah, and Danny Farrington is an amazing luthier.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the Kramer Farrington. Okay, everyone can take their pot shots at that, you know, for whatever reason they want, you know, on the implementation of it. But with this bridge design, I'm like, man, I can get so much more. And I had, you know, I've done a slim body. Actually, the first guitar I made with this design was, you know, 2 inches thick. It was a slim.
Right, right.
It was a slim body with the back hogged out, not back and sides. And so I was like, yeah, I can, you know, I can do this. And then Kevin's like, what about a double neck, you know? And I was like, you know, okay, you know. And so there's too much story to fit this into one show. But I mean, this is a hogged out center. So that, you know, 90% of the wood in the center is removed, but there's some carefully placed little branches and vines in here that are keeping the strength so that it can be an acoustic double neck. There's a true acoustic top and back. And then what we haven't said, what people can't see on the radio, is that it's a lacewood top and a lacewood back.
Yeah, we'll post some pictures
of
it.
You can't make an acoustic guitar top out of lacewood, let alone a double neck that's all wide like this. But I can because, you know, I don't have the torque.
That was part of my dare to Frank. I dare you to make a double neck.
Now, with the principle of the way your bridge is with that negating the pressure and stuff, what was the problem, or was there a problem with two bridges on a soundboard?
There's not. It's
there was no phase issue or nothing because there's two separate ones.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's. Well, let's talk about the tension, right? In other words, it's not going to explode the guitar. It's a 12 string on one side and it's a 6 string on the other side. I have a 12 string in my line, so you can buy a regular, you know, like Dreadnought or Jumbo or whatever. You can get all those guitars in 12s. They, you know, we developed it at the same time,
right,
to do this. But so no matter how much tension there is, you're still safe. If you have acoustic, if you have one of these Fabricus, you can put 15s on it. It's not a problem because, I'm not ripping the thing off the top of the guitar. So once the torque is balanced, then it's just forward pressure.
Yeah.
What difference does it make if I have it twice, you know? And so there is kind of a double X in here to bring all
right,
the stuff
but I mean,
together.
And you're playing one of the necks. The other one's resonating. Is there phasing?
Yeah. No, I mean, if I lay out a hard chord, you can hear the other neck ring a little bit, you know? If I play the 12 string, then the 6 string neck rings. It's no different than any other, than an electric, right? I mean, Jimmy Page, that one. You can play off of it if you want, or you can not. So I have a neck selector on the pickups. So when you're playing the one, that's the piezo that's on. It doesn't care that the other strings are ringing a little bit. You know, it's there's more isolation than there is with magnetic.
Now I'm gonna have we're at the end of the show, and obviously we just scratched the surface. So you know you have to come back. I just wanted to ask you real quick and very briefly your choice of electric pickups for acoustic guitars. We had talked about this. Sure. You're using Fishman on here, and you're using both the internal microphone and the piezo?
On some guitars I do. This particular guitar, Larry Fishman's a good friend of mine. Most of the people listening also might know that I'm working with Fishman on these new Fluence pickups that are amazing. Take the time after the show, go check it out. But it's a brand new technology that is going to change the way that we think, really, about how magnetic pickup is made. So he's a good friend. And then, you know, he says, you know, he's got this little cute little Kula preamp that he uses for a ukulele, but it's EQ'd differently. And I said to, you know, I was like, well, what can we do? And he said, you know, again, I probably shouldn't be saying this, you know, blasting this out. Do not call Fishman and say, will you guys modify stuff for me? But for Kevin, our good friend, he took the small little preamp and then put the voicing back to a regular guitar preamp. So all the bass is back in, you know.
Yeah.
And so we did that. And I needed two of them, and I needed them really small to fit into this thing. So
yeah, because it's a thin body. It's a thin body double neck. It's really nice, and it's not too heavy. It's actually pretty good.
And the other thing, and when you guys see the pictures, you'll see the leaves that we did. oh, yeah. I don't know, what, 4 weeks on the shape of the leaves, yeah. and then another probably 5 or 6 weeks on placement.
It's a beautiful guitar, and that soundboard, that lace wood is really, really pretty.
Well, outrageous. Why don't we have him play it right before we leave?
Right.
Yeah, so to recap on the pickup thing. Okay, so one thing that happens on my guitars, the piezo behaves very, very well because I have two break angles. It first breaks over the ebony and then comes across the bone saddle at a different break. Mm-hmm. So I have a lot of downward pressure and the phase alignment in the top. That's the only message everyone needs to get is undersaddle piezos sound awesome mm-hmm. in these guitars. Then there are systems with microphones. Great. There's all kinds of, you know, cool systems. There's a DTAR multi-source. Fishman has a great prefix premium blend with a great mic in it. All the bells and whistles and all that stuff. But if anybody has like real big questions, like which one for my situation, you got to send me an email, you know. And I just got one yesterday from somebody. What kind of pickups do you want? You know, what goes in it? And that's kind of a personal thing. You know?
Okay, we're out of time.
Yeah. Cool.
Thank you. Before you start playing,
yeah.
www.falboguitars.com.
Yes.
And Tremolno, what is your website?
It's tremolno.com. tremolno.com.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
No, thank you very much. And basically the Tremolno, there's just two little knobs that you put on the thing and it locks
Boom.
It. It's really cool, really quick.
Yeah. No drilling, check it out. Routing, simple.
Yeah, it's really, really nice. Thank you guys again. We're going to go out with him playing the double neck that he made for Kevin. Everybody have a great week, and we will see you next week.